Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan, and I have John joining me on the heels of another Illinois win. 2-0 on the season. Illinois gets it done against Kansas at home. Upset, John. We did it.
Well, looks like 8-4 is a lot more realistic there, hey now. Danny boy.
Hey now.
We love to see it. I know that that was one that people were maybe a little fearful of, and they didn't want to get their hopes up, and oh man, it's going to be like every other sellout that we've had in recent vintage. But man, that was so satisfying. It was great to see the boys come alive in the fourth quarter and just put the game away. It was unbelievable.
Did we deserve to win that game?
Well, Dan, I don't know if I really would agree with the word deserve, but we did win the game, so I'm still going to be happy all the same. But after going back and looking into the tape, I'm trying to do something this year where I know I've tried to do the tape thing in the past. This year, I'm trying to do more of like a grading system, which I know PFF puts out their numbers. So I'm not necessarily trying to like reinvent the wheel on that front, but I think it just helps me with podcast prep, but also it helps just inform, like, this is a very team specific thing. You know, PFF, they're grading thousands of players, making hundreds of plays. And so if I can give maybe a little bit more of an Illini context to it of who's really performing. So I'm trying to do that, and I'm not quite done with it yet. But to your original question of did we deserve to win, I don't know. If Kansas decides to just run the ball like I don't know, 20 times more, then we are not as happy as we are right now as two podcasters.
I mean, Devin Neal, it seemed like every time he touched the ball was just getting to the second level, and I was shocked that they did not just continue to ride that the entire game. But every time Jalen Daniels threw the ball more than 10 yards downfield, it felt like it was an interception. So we earned it in that capacity, I guess, on the turnover front. But I couldn't sit there, at least for the first 3.5 quarters, and say that we were out, you know, we deserved to be in that game, because it felt like we were completely outplayed. The stats showed we were completely outplayed, but we made the big plays when it mattered, and sometimes it pays to get lucky.
I mean, if Xavier Scott is not a part of the Illini football team, that game is a lot more ugly. That's all I'll say. It was an unreal performance by him, but at the same time, there are still plenty of things to correct and get right as you go into a team that you should be, and we'll touch on more on Central Michigan later, but like, there, you know, week one was maybe a little bit more of the mental errors and you know, having dumb penalties that could cost you later. This is more of, you could see against a, you know, a power four opponent, you could see a lot of things that could go wrong in terms of the season playing out. And the second level was the run defense in general. They need to get some things figured out up the middle. And I know that, you know, you have the turnover of replacing Johnny and Keith, and you're only 2 weeks in. So how are you going to do that? And even at the linebacker level, you know, you got some turnover in terms of the coach at that position. You lose some guys in terms of older depth, but you can't have guys catching Devin Neal, you know, 6 yards past the line of scrimmage. And even if guys were catching him or reading and maybe reacting a little bit quicker, then they would be catching their defensive lineman. And it just, I don't know if, once again, this is more of like a Big Ten play problem. So nothing to get too worked up about just yet, but it's more to put in the tickler file. And, you know, if there is something that happens in terms of like a potential upset this week, I'm not necessarily going to be super surprised, because man, it was not bueno. But let's not necessarily focus too much on the bad. It's more just, that was a game that I'm sure everyone, as they were sitting in the third quarter, was thinking, you could have it if you just figured out a couple things here and there. If Aiden Lawfrey catches a pass at the goal line, if you can figure out how to stop Devin Neal just a couple times, maybe we're winning this game. And then the fourth quarter happens, and then, I mean, I don't know how they pulled that 180.
Yeah, it starts with Pat Bryant and ends with Zachary Franklin. I guess that's the answer to how we pulled that one out, because those guys came up as clutch can be time after time. I mean, Zachary with the one-handed catch, first of all, which was the highlight of my Saturday. I watched that video no less than probably 30,
pants
40
off.
Times.
And pants were not off, because I was around my girlfriend's parents. But theoretically, pants were off.
That catch was unreal. And even his big catch at the sticks, coming back to the sideline, the body
That's
control
an NFL
there.
Level catch. Yeah.
Unbelievable catch on 3rd and 10, I believe. Mm-hmm. That was massive.
And that's what you saw 2 years ago, a bunch of from it. Like when he was lighting it up against us and at UTSA, that's the Zachary that, you know, you Ole Miss thought they were getting and that we hopefully are going to get for an entire year.
Yeah. And if we look at it too, going back to last year, in reviewing film and just, I guess, thinking back to our receiver play, it felt like we had great receivers, but they weren't always getting open. They were making contested catches. Casey Washington, king of the contested catch. Mm-hmm. Even Pat Bryant was making plenty of contested catches. Isaiah would, you know, get a little bit of space, but you never, or not never, but rarely saw those guys with, you know, 3-4 yards of space between them and a DB. This year, at least thus far, I felt like our receivers are more open to throw to, and not every play, but Pat Bryant's his catch where he got down to the one, he was wide open on that play. He made a contested catch on the one on the sideline, but Zachary Franklin's found himself pretty open multiple times, you know, so far this season.
He's a very effortless route runner, to your point, and his ability to create separation on the outside is something we haven't seen in a while. And yes, Isaiah was a great separation getter, but that's kind of like you inherently have that advantage in the slot in terms of a guy playing farther off from you or you being quicker than them. And defenses usually scheme to that. So it wasn't this huge difference maker that Isaiah was getting, you know, space because you could just bracket him with zone coverage or even man coverage. Where you need to take advantage of a guy who's getting separation is on the outside. And Zachary is definitely doing that. And then you get into the issue for opposing defenses is, okay, well, if he is doing such a good job, do you try and bracket him a little bit? But then you leave Pat Bryant on an island on his own. And he's shown that he's gotten better in terms of, you know, gaining some separation, being a little bit more refined with his route running. It really is. It's crazy that, I mean, and it might just be a down year for Big Ten wide receivers, but we have a pretty darn good group. I clearly a top half of the Big Ten, I would say. I mean, I haven't watched, you know, every single game of Big Ten football thus far, but I mean, Michigan's not having a great year. Oregon, they'll have skill guys, but like, it's just nice to have like the confidence that those two guys plus other guys are going to, you know, step up. Malik had that great touchdown catch week one, but just those two bona fide studs as your go-to guys is, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And it begs the question for me, you know, in looking at that game, it felt like Altmaier had some training wheels on him by Barry Lunney to start that game until we were down and all of a sudden we're moving the ball and throwing it downfield. But I don't know if that was the game plan. I don't know if, you know, that what exactly that was, but it felt like Altmaier wasn't really allowed to take the top off the defense and start slinging the ball around until late. And I wonder what we see going forward, if that's just kind of the game plan going forward and we just, that's our offense, or if that was strategic against a team like Kansas.
Yeah, I don't quite know exactly. I think some of this might have to do with the reaction to the Cole Rusk injury. And I know it's just one player, but the tight end group was already lacking in terms of a dynamic playmaker. And he was going to be the guy who would be a threat up the seam or over the middle in terms of really stretching a defense. And I wonder if Barry Lunney is kind of sitting there thinking, well, I don't have a guy who can really threaten over the middle. So I'm not really going to call too much. That's going to call for Luke to have to look over the middle or really, you know, rip those intermediate to deep throws across the middle. So I maybe he's just subconsciously even thinking that, and his play calls are more towards, you know, the short game or outside. And then, you know, Luke might be a little tepid because, okay, I can't just keep throwing to the boundary every single time. So I don't exactly know, but yeah, hopefully he found a little rhythm there at the end that can carry him into next week where he can build on that momentum and then, you know, really find a stride throwing the ball.
As much as you like looking at the film, I like looking at the numbers and advanced analytics, and it seemed like majority of our pass plays were thrown to the boundary, to your point. Yep. Like, and just thinking back, the plays I remember are the big plays, and those were Pat Bryant along the sidelines, Zachary Franklin one hand along the sidelines, Zachary Franklin first down catch along the sideline, Pat Bryant coming back, you know, catching the deep ball that got him down to the one that was kind of getting close to the sideline. So I don't know if that's what they saw in the Kansas D or that's just kind of what they feel comfortable with. But to your point, an injury to Cole Rusk, I think certainly factors in with that decision. But the other thing about the numbers that I thought was crazy, and we talked about it, the big timely turnovers is what kept us in. But Xavier Scott's pick six, it's probably not all that shocking, but it had about a 25% win percentage change in the game, that one play. Yep. I mean, and that's what a big play like that can do. And when the margins are so slim, a pick six like that completely changes the game, 25% on one play alone. And I mean, in a game of inches, that makes a huge difference.
Oh yeah. And it's even like the difference between, obviously not all interceptions are created equal. And so I'm not trying to say that, like, you know, you have to make everything a touchdown, but that's why it's so massive when you get those kind of plays and capitalizing them on them in a game like this, where, you know, you still threaten Daniels with turnovers and you capitalize along the way, but making the play itself so that there wasn't any kind of doubt of, you know, the momentum shifting or having the Kansas defense able to answer. That's just, it's quantifiable in terms of what you're saying there in terms of the 25%, but just the momentum shifter of, oh wow, we went from kind of like probably being pretty discouraged going into half to now we're leading, is it's unquantifiable in terms of I know momentum is kind of like this very nebulous thing, but it definitely injects some life into a side. At the very least, if you don't want to call it momentum, just say that it injected life into the Illini sideline and they felt like they could, you know, go out there and perform a little bit more carefree.
We won't apologize for 2-0.
Exactly.
And I will say there was one play, it's probably gotten a little bit of play, but the guy who's probably happiest we came out on top is a guy like Mac Rosetich, who had another punt this week, but to his credit, was able to chase it down, dive on it. In real time, I honestly was thinking that was a safety and was devastated that that was going to be the play that lost us the game. And come to find out, it's just a touchback. And honestly, I think actually gave us a little bit of an advantage because we moved the ball probably 2 yards forward from where he was catching was fair catching it. So somehow a play like that almost was a disaster ends up being his recovery on that play, getting on the ball and securing it in the end zone for what happened to be a touchback, ended up catapulting us. And, you know, from there on, we kind of took back control of the game and ultimately got the win in Champaign in front of a sold out crowd and kept, you know, this program's momentum going forward.
Yep. That's a statement win for Coach Bielema. I know that obviously the 2022 season was massive in terms of building some kind of momentum within the program, in terms of just that base that he's going to always try to achieve. But this is kind of like catapulting hopefully to the next level, so that our predictions of 7-5 and 8-4 aren't just, you know, pie in the sky. We're hoping that every single outcome that can go our way does go our way, and it's more of like, yeah, we had some coin flips. We won, you know, maybe most of them in this case, but instead of it just being we're hoping to win a couple home games that we shouldn't, it's more of, oh yeah, we're coming out on top of home of coin flips where, you know, we're more prepared or we're just better set up because of certain factors. And so that's just a massive win. It's funny. I have like a little anecdote because as I alluded to, I was watching the game at my girlfriend's lake house. So I was around her family. So I was trying not to go too crazy, but luckily but eighth grade football, I know no one necessarily cares about this, but we had a situation in the championship game where I was kicking off and a kid muffed it, similar to that, where he like muffed it into the end zone and then recovered it. And the officials there called it a safety, which was totally wrong. Because if you think about it conceptually, like the team that is receiving never possessed the ball. Like right. It doesn't turn into their ball. So if the ball leaks into the end zone, it's still the same as if it just kind of like rolled in there on its own. So I know the announcer was talking about like, oh, you know, the Kansas player like kicked it in the end. Like that still doesn't matter. It doesn't matter like how the ball got into the end zone. It's that Illinois never possessed it. So because we never possessed it in the first place, now if we had caught it and then fumbled it backwards, then yeah, it's a safety, but that's a completely different story.
Yeah, so it was a weird play, and I think my brain is so trained to think I see a ball on the ground in the end zone and teams running bad and scrambling for it. That's not a good thing. And in this case, it wasn't really a bad thing at all, but my brain sees ball and says bad. That's all I process.
And even to that, like it's still good, even if it was bad for Rosetich to get out of the ball, because
points could have been a touchdown.
And hopefully, yeah, exactly. It's, you know, it's complete game changer. So good on him for not giving up on the play. Hopefully, you know, he takes a page out of the Mikey Dudek punt return playbook and can be a little bit more dynamic, but also have a higher floor of just catching everything, please, because I'm not ready for a third straight week of doing that.
You set me up for a good segue, but before we get to that segue, I actually want to bring up one thing. Can we talk about the Northeast stairwell tradition that's becoming a thing?
Oh my gosh. Yep. Yes, we can.
I watched probably every angle that I could find of Brett Bielema and the team walking through that Northeast stairwell and just, I guess, ramps upon ramps of people cheering and waiting for the team to come through to give them the praise that they deserved. And I kind of love that that's becoming a tradition.
I absolutely love it. I mean, that's something where you start to build a winning tradition and a winning program, and you have the coach after each game going into the Northeast Tower. Just, and I love too that Bielema was trying to do like the ILL I&I callback, because can you only imagine how, like, if you had
the echoes,
thousands of people just yelling I&I back at, like, he's the only one, like, it gets quiet, but then you hear this roar of people. Yeah, like, I know that it was more of a, it wasn't quite as clean because everyone was more just clapping and cheering, but thinking about how that can get integrated into like an actual tradition would be unbelievable.
The school pride, and I'll just eat up those videos all day.
Yep.
Like, us and having a winning program, that's a taste of what it's like when things are going your way on the football field. It just permeates throughout campus. It permeates throughout the fan base, and people want to be in Champaign. They want to be tailgating. They want to be at the games. Like, it all just builds and snowballs upon itself. And it's cool to see, because we've been waiting a long time for that positive momentum to keep building and get to this point. And it's super early, and one win over Kansas isn't going to make your season, right? But having moments like that is what it takes to build this program up and to get back to where everyone wants this program to be.
And it's infectious. It gets people coming back. Like, to your point, even just the people at that game, like, I think about, you know, we weren't there obviously on Saturday, but like when we went to Vegas and that the scene after we won that Friday night game and we're just the going down the stairwell and everyone's yelling ILLI, and like, that's something that's going to be a fond memory forever and a positive association with, you know, the Illini basketball team and even Vegas. But like, this is something where people there are going to be thinking about how they got to be in that tower, you know, screaming, shouting, cheering on Brett Bielema, and that's something that they can bring back another time. It's just building those associations each time you go to a game, rather than, yeah, you know, I hope the team wins and I'm here because, you know, I love the school and I want to support them, but probably not going to win. You get those, that clear contrast and juxtaposition, and you're building, you know, associations for the people there, for the 60,000 people that were there. They're spreading the good word, and you're getting even more people. The demand goes up. You get more people tailgating. People want to honk the siren. It's all good in the Illini land.
100%. My FOMO was maxed out. And
oh, yeah.
Credit to me, I was at a charity event, so my excuse was valid. But it was, had we lost that game, I would have been like, oh, I'm glad I wasn't there. But now the FOMO I have for having missed that game, that's what you want to create. That, like, oh man, you weren't there. We were all there celebrating. It was such a good moment. And that's what kind of builds, and the fans want to be at games and have those moments. And you keep winning some of these big games that you're an underdog in, and all of a sudden, people, there's demand to go to the game. Ticket prices are up, and it's just all a positive thing for the program.
Yep. That's that was last week, and now we gotta, to your point, keep building on that momentum, because you cannot get caught in a trap game this week. That is the last thing that you cannot. 3-1 is now the expected minimum going into your fifth game. You cannot be 2-2. You can't find a way to gack this game.
And I'll go back to my segue that I hit pause on, because there's one guy in this program that's not going to allow us to fall subject to a trap game. And he's a close friend of ours, and a close friend of most of these listeners who have been with the Field Pass for a while. And our friend Mikey Dudek is the honorary captain for the game. And we talked to Mikey a little bit, and we're kicking back and forth some ideas on what he might have to say in the locker room. But he said it, not me. If Illinois loses to Central Michigan, it's on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really, we'll have to, you know, drag him back on the pod and
ridicule, you know, him.
Exactly. We'll have to give him the business, and no one wants that. We don't want to have to bring Mikey back in bad terms and have to call him bad names. And I you know, I don't think he's going to let it happen, Dan, to your point. And to his point, it just can't happen.
Nope. No chance. Not with our friend Mikey giving the speech. And it's crazy to think, when we were talking to Mikey about it, that it's been 7 years since he suited up, which feels like, I mean, it feels like it was 4 or 5 years ago. But there's one guy on the team that was his teammate back in 2018, and that's Ezekiel Holmes. And he couldn't believe it that Ezekiel's still on that team. So he said he might still have to give him a hard time during the pregame speech. But it's
we'll report back.
Yeah, we'll get the inside scoop on how the speech went over. The one thing I thought was hilarious was watching Bielema talk about it at his press conference. The giggle that Bielema had talking about his phone call with Mikey. And for a little Easter egg for people at home, Mikey went a little more aggressive on the phone call than Bielema let on, but that's why Bielema was actually laughing thinking about it. But he gave the clean version of events. But Mikey told us he was giving Brett a hard time, especially about being picked captain choice number two behind Kurt Kitner.
Homecoming, is that an opportunity to visit with some former players? How important it is to keep those guys in the
family? Mikey Dudak is our guest captain, I'm excited about. I remember playing against or coaching against him, and then I met him at a function. I'm just like, man, this kid's going to be a guest captain. This is great, Mike Dudak, right? So I call him, and I'd actually contact Kurt Kitner. Kurt was going to try to do it, and then Kurt's coaching his son, so his youth football schedule got in the way of him being a guest captain, but we'll get him back sooner than later. So I called Mike, and I know him, but I don't know him well. And I said, hey, would you be interested in guest coming? He goes, yeah, I've been kind of waiting for this call. I'm like, oh, that's classic, right? So I took the zinger.
Yeah, I mean, not a bad guy to be the second choice too. you'd like for it to organically just be Mikey as the sole decision for Coach B. But I'm glad that they had that moment. And I'm excited to see how the boys play after Mikey riles them up.
Hey. Trap game, you said it. We won't allow it. We won't stand for it. We're going to be 3-0. We don't even have to think too hard about it. Just take care of business. Get it done. I think Nebraska's got a cupcake game this week, so they'll likely take care of their matchup, and it'll be a clash of the 3-0 Titans.
A ranked matchup.
A throwback to the 90s, when both programs were storied.
Yep. Yeah, not quite Big Ten powerhouses, but yes, it would tickle some fancies of people who are hardcore in 90s college football hardos. So that would be it'll be a great matchup in Lincoln if both teams are 3-0 heading in.
There's probably a few people listening to this podcast that are laughing at the fact that we don't really know what college football programs were that good in the 90s because we were both born in the 90s.
They're banging their heads against the wall.
So our memories didn't start probably football wise until early 2000s to mid 2000s. So don't blame us if we have historically inaccurate information. But my brain tells me that Nebraska was good and Illinois were both pretty good programs in the at some point in the 90s. And because of that, this is going to be a throwback game. But we're not talking about Nebraska yet.
Nope.
We're not talking about fake Patrick Mahomes at quarterback for Nebraska yet. We'll get to that next week. But Central Michigan, there's honestly not too much to say about Central Michigan. I mean, they
got curb stomped.
They got curb stomped.
At Pitbull Stadium.
Against FIU last week. And the week before that, they destroyed Central Connecticut State, which doesn't really sound like
a real school.
It's not a real school. It sounds like, I don't know, when you're playing NCAA football and you're trying to find the easiest team to match up against, so there's the biggest discrepancy in skill, you come up with a team like Idaho State or Central Connecticut State, or it's like random FCS Midwest school one. And
there's a direction and a state in Central Connecticut State. Like, that's the most made up school name of all time.
Yeah.
It's either Connecticut State or Central Connecticut. What are we doing here?
I will say, John, follow my logic here for a second. I want to look this up to make sure I'm accurate, but I'm trying to give, I'm digging for something to talk about. And we obviously know that Central Michigan beat Central Connecticut State by 56 points in week one. But then Central Connecticut State last week, they beat Fordham by 30 points. And that Fordham team played Bowling Green in week one and only lost to Bowling Green by 24 points. So Bowling Green, we know, they played Penn State and only lost to Penn State by 7 points. So all of this to say, John, if we're using transitive properties here and we're we're mixing and matching.
100% accurate every single time.
never flawed. If we're doing that, you could maybe make the case that Central Connecticut State is a team of equal caliber, if not maybe better than Bowling Green, who almost just beat Penn State. So
then you could say that they're of equal caliber or just slightly worse than Penn State.
100%.
This made up school.
That's the logic I go by.
And I'm following it 100%.
And because of that, I'm going to say it. Central Michigan, they might not be that bad. I know they lost to FIU, got smoked by FIU, one of the worst losses of the week last week, honestly, compared to spreads. But they did smoke Central Connecticut State in week one. And using all of our transitive property logic, maybe Central Connecticut State's not the worst team ever. So let's not sleep on a team like Central Michigan and have a Notre Dame NIU situation this week.
To your point, I'll do my own little pro con exercise there. So Joe, what do we say? Was Labus?
Joe Labus.
It's
5 interceptions last week, John.
I mean, it is just Bayless, just kind of with some mixing ups of. So maybe I should be a little easier on him, but
dyslexic Bayless.
It pretty much is. He is a former 4-star prep. So you'd be like, oh, okay, kind of good. Ohio quarterback. Ohio is, you know, a football powerhouse for prep talent. The bad thing is he went to Iowa, and if Iowa passed on him and he was able to hit the transfer portal as a former 4-star, then that's telling you something. Plus, then you add the data point of him throwing 5 interceptions, one of which was a pick six. Another one should have been a pick six. And I mean, it could be a trap game because the Scott boys in the defensive backfield might just be licking their chops and being way too aggressive. And then you get a couple double moves and then all of a sudden it's 17-3 and you're like, what's happening here? But mark me up as this podcast has well documented my lack of fear of Spencer Petras. So I think I'm going to put, Joe Labus in that camp as well. And say that I am personally not scared at all. And I can't wait for him to throw up some absolute ducks for the boys to take advantage of.
We're close to leading the nation in interceptions as well. And
if there's ever,
you know, they have to be up there. If there's ever a game to just extend that number and, I guess, make some proactive progress toward Robert's 2025 interceptions post, this is the game to do it. And we've intercepted the ball basically at will, I feel like, this year. And you come away with a few more positive turnover games and you're going to be sitting pretty.
Now, is this a save some for the fishies game in terms of your interceptions? Are
no,
you,
I want
are
all you... of them. I want to go yeah. plus 7.
Yeah.
I'm greedy.
You want to keep the good muscle memory and habits of guys catching the ball. You don't want people to drop them just cause you're like, oh, that's actually good that Matt Bailey dropped an interception. That's fine.
John, let me just say, I've never seen anyone overdose on interceptions.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can try this year.
Central Michigan and Joe Labus are the place to start.
But I don't want to say there's not much there, but like if you look, Central Connecticut State's not a real school. They got absolutely pasted by FIU. So like what, not that we can't bring any type of analysis, but it was like FIU ran the ball at will. Their receivers created tons of separation. So I'm looking for Pat Bryant and Zakari to just continue their hot streak. Maybe get some of the younger guys in there and see how they can do. I know Colin Dixon's been getting some run early in the games. Malik will get some run during the middle of the games. You got to be able to establish the run against a team like that. The interior of the line. This is actually a good stopping point of my rant. That is
John's
not
brain running at 300 miles an hour, running like Caden Fagan right now.
I said it in the season preview that this team would go as the right tackle has gone, and I mean, it has, because they're 2-0 and Melvin Priestley is playing like an absolute mother effing dog. I absolutely love his play. He does not have a, well, I shouldn't say he doesn't have a bad rep, but he hit every single rep is taken seriously and violently. And I think there was some concern that, you know, he had a bunch of personal fouls last year at Grambling. And I think there was maybe some worry that that level of violence would be too much and that it wouldn't translate. Thus far, it's been controlled and it's been unbelievable to see him go out there and perform. He is not only the best in terms of just like individual reps, but consistency, which I wouldn't, JC Davis is also playing very well. Zai is underrated. So you're getting some good play from the line thus far, but Melvin Priestley is just setting the tone right now. And I love to see it. But in terms of how that relates to Central Michigan, you want to see that continue on and you want to see, you know, the interior shore up a little bit more, build some more confidence, work that unit a little bit better, because there were some things against Kansas that weren't great. But in terms of like a preview for Central Michigan, just keep up that good work on the edges.
Melvin Priestley plays with so much violence, and I love every second of it. You've watched pretty much every play and watched, I mean, we've all watched every play, but you've watched it back every position pretty much going as you're going through the film. And so you know it better than I, but even the plays I can think of, he plays through the whistle. He plays aggressively, violently. And I mean, he's a mauler, and I love it.
But he doesn't lose his technique. That's the beautiful thing. He's not playing outside the structure of what he's called to do. And that's not to say he's got perfect technique, but he is not losing momentum because he's unnecessarily being violent or he's, you know, focusing on something else and trying to prove something. It's beautiful because that violence is channeled into each movement, but his technique is still so good.
What do you want to see this team do offensively this week? Do you want to see him open it up and let Luke sling it around, or do you want to see him just try to dominate the run game and just run all over Central Michigan?
I would love a throwback Brett Bielema team game where you get 200-yard rushers, if I'm being quite honest, because I think we've seen, to your point, you know, it would be great to see the training wheels come off and for them to throw the ball all around the yard. And I think that's great to have that. And I'm not saying you can't win games that way, but I need to see a lot more consistency in the run game just as Big Ten play starts. So I would love to see, you know, Caden Fagan, maybe Khalil Valentine as a sneaky, you know, pick to go for 100 if he's playing some garbage time. Like I would rather see them establish the run early and often, maybe for the sake of efficiency. Maybe, you know, your EPA isn't as high per play isn't high because you're running the ball more and you're not quite, it's more of a ground and pound. And maybe you don't put up the points that you would be expected to see, that Vegas is expecting to see. But I would prefer that just as it relates to the Nebraska game and how it relates to that middle stretch of four games where you're going to be playing pretty much a gauntlet. You need to be able to start leaning on that unit, especially the guys on the interior up front.
I'm with that game plan too. Just after Kansas kind of shut down our run game, and I mean, our offense just sputtered because of it. It was tough to watch. And I think getting back to that run game, and you know, that's what Brett wants to do. He wants to run the ball and run it well. And hopefully that's what opens up the pass game. But I think when you have a talent discrepancy like you'll have on Saturday, that's where you get some confidence built up in the O-line and you get things clicking through running the ball.
Mm-hmm. And just as like an add-in, the only thing I'm looking for on defense is just some semblance of a pass rush, because it really hasn't been there. That was honestly, I know that we talked about, you know, the linebackers in the interior not being that great and run stuff, but we need to see more from especially the outside backers in terms of generating a pass rush, having some level of pass rush moves and ability to generate hurries at the very, like it just has to be there, especially against a team like Central Michigan.
That's a good lead in to picks of the week, because I'll just go first. And my pick is going to be Gabe Backus this week. Grade out wise for Central Michigan, they're one of the worst run blocking teams. I know you just talked about the pass rush, but we should be able to feast against this O-line. And I think, you know, the way Kansas ran it, obviously linebackers weren't really making tackles. It seemed like to me, and you could correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seemed like the linebackers were in the right spots a lot of the times, meaning they were in the gaps and they were there to make the play in the hole and they were whiffing on tackles. And I don't know if some of that is, you know, looking back to last year when we had Johnny and Keith, and they're kind of clogging up lanes, or they're at least throwing their arms up and slowing running backs, making the running backs think. And, you know, even if it's for a split second, that allows the linebackers to really get in there aggressively and clean it up. And maybe the D line so far this year has, I haven't seen them even getting in those lanes and throwing their arms up and trying to just, I guess, clog things up. So I'm looking for someone like Gabe Backus, who's been around now for a few years. He's had experience. Now is the time where he needs to take that step. And I think he's going to have a dominant performance against a lesser opponent this week.
I would agree. Yeah, that's a great pick. I'm going to stay on the same track in terms of going defense. I'm going Matt Bailey as my pick of the week. Not necessarily as like he needs to get right, but this is just that kind of, he's not a free safety at all, but he's more free roaming in that second level of the defense. And that's something where, you know, we just talked about Joe Labus throwing 5 interceptions. That's something where he can be in all those little areas where, you know, you find a mistake and you capitalize on it. And in terms of watching these games back, I know that he's coming back from injury and that he doesn't have as many games as like you'd think. I know that he had the superb freshman year, but that was more in like a reserve-ish role where he was either getting garbage time and he could just kind of fly around and not really think, or he was getting like very limited spot time in like an actual sub package. So now that he's being relied upon more, that consistency needs to build. And this is a perfect game where he can build that kind of level of consistency, not just be, I'm not even saying that he's guessing, because obviously I don't know what the defensive call is every single time. It's more just watching how he's reading, reacting. Either he's got to pick up a little bit more of the speed of the game, which comes with time and the reps, which he needs to get in game because he's missed a lot of time with injury, or, you know, he just, it finally clicks and it's hitting at, you know, every cylinder is going right. And he's not only playing fast, because he does play fast, it takes him that little extra tick to get to that point. And so if he can eliminate that and just play fast immediately, he is going to, you know, play up to that all Big Ten hype that we know that he can.
I'm actually disappointed in us and those two picks. And the reason why is because neither of us picked Mikey as our pick of the week. Mikey's pregame speech. That ball was sitting on the tee for us to pick that, and we whiffed.
Well, we're so deep into that. We're such elite football fans, Dan, that we know what's wrong with the team, and we got to see some improvements. Whereas, you know, the spiritual pick is Mikey as the guest captain, because he needs to fire the boys up and he needs to have that Dan Saladino drop of trap game sitting in the back of his head as he's telling the boys that they need to go out there and perform because they cannot lose Central Michigan this week.
I might have to bring the sound back for just for this game alone.
You just might.
Cue it up right now. Trap game.
Trap game.
There it is. All right. Give me your score prediction, John. Illinois, they are favored by 18 points. So I've seen the over-under at about 49.5. Weather's going to be decent. Maybe a slight chance of rain from the hurricane making its way up. I know Robert's been tracking that. Hopefully it's going to miss us. So very slight chance at this point. It looks like 20% chance of rain, but it's going to be 80 degrees, cloudy, overcast. Should be a pretty good game, pretty good day for a football game.
I agree, and I'm going to keep it short. I'm going to keep it sweet, 35-3. Impose your will early and often. Do not let up. Make sure that you execute. No dumb penalties. Show me some signs of improvement on the defensive front 7, and let's get out there with a win and get ready for Nebraska.
I like it. Similar tune to me. I'm going 38-10 Illinois. We should steamroll them. This should be a game that isn't ever really competitive. If it is, that's not a good sign for things to come. But I would like to see backups in there in the second half and getting some second teamers, some reps. So chalk me up for a 38-10 win. Illinois rolls, gets the 3-0 and gets that undefeated matchup. Hopefully a double ranked matchup, you know, next week. If we slip out from 26 on the AP poll up to 25 or 24 with a couple losses and Nebraska takes care of business, it could be a 21-24 type of game next week.
I need it. I need it so badly. I just need us to be ranked. I don't give a crap what happens in Nebraska. I mean, it would be cool to take down another ranked opponent, but go in there, take care of business, go from 26 to 25, get that number next to your name, and boy, it's going to feel dang good.
And if you don't have Peacock, make sure you get Peacock, because this game is our first game of the year on Peacock, 11 a.m. on Saturday. I don't want you turning on the TV at 10:55, getting ready for the game, and realizing you don't have Peacock. So make sure you get it. If not, find a bar near you to go watch it at. But Illinois takes on the Chippewas. Mikey Dudek, honorary guest captain. This one's on him.
This game will be known as the Mikey Dudek game. You heard it here first.
All right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Field Pass. As always, you can find us on social media, just @The Field Pass. We appreciate you all for listening. And as always, go Illini.